A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
I had this conversation recently with a friend of mine. Observant Jewish guy, knows his texts. The kind of person who can quote Talmud from memory. And he mentioned reincarnation. Just dropped it into conversation like it was the most normal thing in the world. And I stopped him and said, wait, reincarnation? I'd always filed that under Hinduism, Buddhism, maybe some New Age bookshop in Sedona. Not something you'd find in a synagogue.
What did he say?
He looked at me like I just asked whether Jews believe in gravity. Said something like, of course, Gilgal. The soul comes back to finish what it started. This isn't obscure, Korn. It's in the Zohar. And I realized I'd been walking around with a completely wrong map of what the world's religions actually teach about this.
You're not alone. Pew Research did a major survey back in 2009. They found that 24% of American Christians say they believe in reincarnation, 16% of American Jews. Those are not fringe numbers. And here's the thing that makes it fascinating. Neither Christianity nor mainstream Judaism officially teaches reincarnation as doctrine. So you've got this enormous gap between what the traditions formally hold and what millions of actual believers believe.
A quarter of American Christians believing in something their own councils formally condemned. That's not a gap, that's a canyon.
And it's not random. People aren't just confused. There's something about the idea of coming back, of unfinished business, of second chances, that keeps surfacing across traditions that supposedly have nothing to do with it. Even traditions that actively tried to stamp it out.
Daniel sent us this one. He'd had basically the same experience I did. A conversation with a more observant friend that made him realize he didn't actually know where Judaism stands on reincarnation. And he wants us to compare how the major world religions approach the concept. He's the first to admit this could be a multi-episode series. And he's right. You can't really talk about reincarnation without eventually talking about the afterlife, the purpose of the world, all the big metaphysical furniture. But his prompt today is specific. Let's look at what each tradition actually teaches, compare the mechanisms, and figure out where the boundaries really are.
The boundaries are not where most people think. The standard story is, East believes in reincarnation, West believes in resurrection, end of discussion. That story is wrong. Or at least it's so oversimplified it might as well be wrong.
Here's what we're going to do. We'll trace the actual theological DNA of reincarnation across Hinduism, Buddhism, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. We'll find a tradition, Judaism, that most people get completely wrong on this question. And we'll end up somewhere more interesting than who believes what. Because what a tradition says about reincarnation turns out to reveal what it thinks a human being actually is.
That's the deeper question hiding inside Daniel's prompt. Not just, do you come back, but what is the thing that would come back? And the answers are wildly different. Before we can compare anything, we need to nail down what we actually mean by reincarnation, because the word gets thrown around for at least three different concepts that are theologically miles apart.
Okay, walk me through them.
First, reincarnation proper, the rebirth of a soul into a new body. This is what Hinduism and Buddhism are known for, though they mean very different things by it, which we'll get to. Second, resurrection, the restoration of the same body at the end of time. That's the classic Christian and Jewish doctrine, one and done, no cycling. And third, metempsychosis, the transmigration of souls, sometimes across species boundaries, often immediate rather than waiting for some end-of-days event.
Reincarnation says new body. Resurrection says same body restored. Metempsychosis says soul moves into whatever's available. Three different mechanisms.
And conflating them is what produces most of the confusion. Someone hears that a Druze believes in metempsychosis and says, oh, like Hinduism. No, not like Hinduism. The mechanism, the timeline, the purpose are all different. It'd be like saying a bicycle and a submarine are the same thing because they're both vehicles.
Though I'd watch a submarine race.
I'm sure you would. But here's why the distinctions matter for what we're doing today. When Christianity's Second Council of Constantinople anathematized reincarnation in 553, they were specifically condemning Origen's idea of pre-existing souls cycling through bodies. They weren't rejecting resurrection. They were drawing a line between two mechanisms. When the Zohar talks about a soul coming back as an animal for purification, that's metempsychosis, not quite the same as the Hindu model. You can't compare traditions until you know which thing each one is actually talking about.
Our toolkit for the rest of this episode is those three categories: reincarnation, resurrection, metempsychosis. And Daniel's prompt is specifically about the first one, though we'll bump into the others along the way.
And we're parking two enormous questions that Daniel correctly flagged. One, what each tradition thinks the afterlife actually looks like. Heaven, hell, Sheol, Nirvana, all of that. Two, the meta question of what the ultimate purpose of the world is. Those are whole episodes. Today, we're tracking just the reincarnation belief itself, who teaches it, what the mechanism is, and why the boundaries between traditions are so much blurrier than the standard East-West story suggests.
Which brings us to the tradition everyone thinks they understand. Let's start with Hinduism and Buddhism, the supposed baseline.
The earliest formal articulations show up in the Upanishads, roughly 800 to 200 BCE. The core idea is samsara, the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth, driven by karma. Your actions in this life determine the quality of your next birth. Could be human again, could be an animal, could be a god. The cycle is endless unless you achieve moksha, liberation, escape from the whole thing.
The goal is to get out. Reincarnation isn't a feature, it's the problem.
And the mechanism is tied to an eternal self. Atman. The Bhagavad Gita, which dates to around 200 BCE to 200 CE, has the line everyone quotes. Krishna says, just as the embodied soul passes through childhood, youth, and old age, so too it passes into another body. The self is permanent, it just changes houses.
The house you get next depends on how you behaved in the last one.
And this is where it gets theologically entangled with the caste system. Your birth caste is understood as reflecting past life karma. It's not random, and it's not injustice. It's the universe balancing accounts.
Which, I mean, you can see how that becomes a convenient way to tell people at the bottom of the social ladder that they earned it.
That critique has been made for centuries, and it's not wrong. But the internal logic is consistent. Karma is a moral law as reliable as gravity. No external judge, no divine intervention, just cause and effect across lifetimes.
Hinduism says you have a soul. That soul is eternal. It cycles through bodies based on karma, and the whole point is to eventually stop cycling. Buddhism keeps the cycle but throws out the soul. How does that even work?
This is the distinction that trips people up constantly. Buddhism rejects Atman, the permanent self. The doctrine is anatta, no self. So when a Buddhist talks about rebirth, they are explicitly not talking about a soul moving from body to body. What gets reborn is a causal continuum, a stream of consciousness conditioned by past actions that arises in a new form. The classic analogy is a flame passing from one candle to the next.
The second flame isn't the same flame, but it wouldn't exist without the first one.
That's it. Continuity without identity. The Tibetan Book of the Dead, the Bardo Thadol from the 8th century, describes a 49-day intermediate state, the Bardo, between death and rebirth. The consciousness navigates the state based on its karmic imprints. It's detailed, almost technical. Stage by stage, what you see, what you should do, what to avoid.
Then there's the Dalai Lama, probably the most famous reincarnation case study on the planet.
When a Dalai Lama dies, a search process begins. Senior monks look for signs, dreams, visions, sometimes the deceased left clues about where to look. They identify a child, test them by presenting objects the previous Dalai Lama owned mixed in with similar items, see if the child recognizes them. The current Dalai Lama, the 14th, was identified at age 2. It's a living institutional example of how this doctrine actually operates in practice.
It's also a fascinating test case for the no-self problem. If there's no permanent soul, what exactly is being recognized in that 2-year-old?
The official answer is a continuity of mental streams. The same causal chain, not the same person. But I'll admit, in practice, most Tibetan Buddhists talk about it in ways that sound a lot more like a soul than the philosophy would strictly permit. The doctrine is subtle. Lived belief is often less so.
which is a pattern we're going to see everywhere. Now, before we leave the Eastern traditions, you mentioned Jainism has its own twist on this.
The Jains have what might be the most materialist model of karma in any tradition. They believe in an eternal soul, jiva. But here's the distinctive part. Karma is literal physical matter. Particles that attach to the soul weigh it down, keep it trapped in the cycle. Every action, every thought, generates these karmic particles. Liberation means shedding every last one.
Karma isn't a metaphor or a moral principle. It's stuff.
It's stuff. And the Jain practices of extreme asceticism, fasting, non-violence to an almost impossible degree, are about not accumulating any more of it while burning off what's already there. It's the most physically concrete version of reincarnation mechanics anywhere.
We've got three Eastern traditions, all believing in the cycle, but for completely different reasons and with completely different mechanisms. Hinduism says eternal self cycles until it escapes. Buddhism says there is no self, just a causal process that keeps propagating. Jainism says there is a self, but it's literally coated in karmic particles. Three different answers to what is the thing that comes back.
Now we can use that baseline to look at the Western traditions, where the surprises really start. Let's pick up the thread with Judaism, because this is where the standard map completely breaks down. The Hebrew term is Gilgal, which literally means cycle or rolling. It first appears explicitly in the Sefer Habahir, a 10th century Kabbalistic text, but the roots go deeper into earlier mystical traditions.
This isn't some fringe footnote. It's actually in the mystical canon.
It's not just in the canon. It becomes central. The big moment is the 16th century, Isaac Luria, the Ari. Lurianic Kabbalah builds an entire cosmology around Gilgal. Here's the core idea. When God created the world, there was a cosmic catastrophe, Shevarat HaKelim, the shattering of the vessels. Divine light poured into vessels that couldn't contain it. Everything shattered, and sparks of holiness scattered into the material world. The job of humanity is tikkun, repair. And sometimes one lifetime isn't enough to complete your assigned repair work.
You come back to finish the job? It's not punishment, it's a second chance.
And this is what makes Jewish reincarnation radically different from the Hindu model. In Hinduism, you reincarnate because your karma forces you back. It's cause and effect, morally automatic. In Judaism, you come back to complete specific mitzvot you left unfinished, or to repair damage you caused. The Chabad source frames it explicitly as the soul's journey to fulfill its purpose. It's not a cycle to escape, it's a mission to complete.
That flips the whole emotional valence. Reincarnation as opportunity rather than trap.
There's a fascinating limit built in. The Kabbalists derive from Job chapter 33, verse 29. God does all these things twice or three times with a man, that a soul gets up to three reincarnations, three chances to get it right. Some later Kabbalists extended this, but the basic structure is a limited number of returns, not an endless cycle.
Three strikes and you're judged?
Something like that. Though the Zohar also describes souls reincarnating into animals, plants, even inanimate objects, as a form of purification. A soul that committed certain transgressions might need to pass through non-human existence to be cleansed. That's closer to metempsychosis, to use our earlier distinction.
Why don't most Jews know any of this? I grew up around Judaism, never heard the word Gilgal until that conversation.
Because Rabbinic Judaism, the mainstream, has historically de-emphasized it. Maimonides, the 12th century philosopher who essentially codified normative Jewish belief, wrote his 13 principles of faith. They include resurrection of the dead. They are completely silent on reincarnation. That silence was consequential. Gilgal lived in Kabbalistic and Hasidic circles. It was esoteric, not exoteric, taught in small groups, not from the pulpit.
Which explains the pew number. 16% of American Jews believe in reincarnation. Not because the tradition lacks the concept, but because most synagogues never teach it.
It's available in the tradition, but not distributed through the normal channels. You have to go looking for it, or be in a community that emphasizes mystical texts.
Judaism occupies this fascinating middle position. It officially has resurrection at the end of days. That's the Maimonidean mainstream. But it also has Gilgal in the meantime, running parallel, serving a different purpose. The traditions aren't mutually exclusive.
That's what makes Christianity's story so different. Christianity had the concept in its early centuries. Origen of Alexandria, 3rd century, speculated about the pre-existence of souls and possible reincarnation. But then came the Second Council of Constantinople in 553. The council explicitly anathematized the idea, closed the door.
What were they actually condemning? Was it specifically Origen?
It was broader than just Origen. The anathemas targeted any doctrine of pre-existing souls cycling through multiple bodies. The council drew a hard line, one life, one death, one resurrection at the end of time. Yourself is unique and unrepeatable. Christianity bet everything on resurrection, the same body restored and glorified, not on the soul trying again in a different body.
Yet 24% of American Christians tell pollsters they believe in reincarnation. A quarter of the faithful holding a belief their own councils formally condemned over 1,400 years ago.
That's the canyon you mentioned earlier, and I don't think it's just confusion. I think people are reaching for something the official doctrine doesn't give them, a sense of second chances, of unfinished business, of justice that spans beyond a single lifetime. The folk belief persists because it answers a question the formal theology leaves open.
Which brings us to Islam. Where's the reincarnation there?
Mainstream Sunni and Shia Islam reject it. The Quran is clear on resurrection and judgment, one life, one death, one accounting. But here's where it gets interesting. Some Sufi traditions, especially the 13th century poet Rumi, speak in ways that sound a lot like reincarnation. I died as a mineral and became a plant. I died as a plant and became an animal. I died as an animal and became a man. That's Rumi.
That's pretty unambiguous.
Then there's the Druze, an offshoot of Ismaili Shia Islam. They believe in metempsychosis, immediate transmigration at death. The soul goes straight into a new body. And here's the distinctive part. They believe the number of souls is fixed and finite. Souls are continuously reborn, but only within the Druze community. You can't reincarnate into a different faith.
It's a closed system. The soul population is constant, and membership is non-transferable. That's got to reinforce communal boundaries pretty effectively.
And it's a living counterexample to the idea that reincarnation is exclusively Eastern. The Druze have been practicing this for centuries, right in the heart of the Middle East.
Let me see if I can map what we've got. Hinduism says the eternal self cycles until it escapes. Buddhism says there is no self, just a causal process propagating. Judaism says you have a self with a specific mission, and you get up to 3 lives to complete it. Christianity says your self is unique and unrepeatable, one life, one resurrection. Islam says mostly the same, except the Druze branch says souls transmigrate immediately within a closed community. And a quarter of Christians and 16% of Jews believe in reincarnation, regardless of what the official doctrines say.
That's the spectrum. And Judaism is the tradition that blows up the simple East-West binary. It has resurrection and reincarnation running in parallel, serving different theological purposes. Justice at the end of days, and completion in the meantime.
The next time someone tells me Judaism doesn't believe in reincarnation, the answer is, which Judaism, which century, and which text are you asking?
That framework gives us 3 takeaways I think are worth naming explicitly, because they're the kind of thing you can actually use next time this topic comes up at a dinner table. First, the reincarnation versus resurrection. Binary is a false dichotomy. Judaism is the proof. You can have resurrection at the end of days, the dead rising in their bodies, the Maimonidean mainstream, and Gilgal in the meantime, soul cycling back to finish specific work. They're not competing. They serve different purposes. Resurrection is about ultimate justice, the cosmic accounting at the end. Gilgal is about completion, the chance to tie up what you left undone.
It's not either or. It's both, doing different jobs.
And once you see that, the whole East-West map stops making sense. The traditions aren't lined up on one axis. They're making different bets about what the problem even is.
Which is your second takeaway?
What a tradition says about reincarnation reveals what it thinks a human being actually is. Hinduism says you have an eternal self, Atman, that cycles until it escapes. Buddhism says there is no self, just a causal process propagating. Judaism says you have a self with a specific mission, and you get up to 3 lives to complete it. Christianity says your self is unique and unrepeatable, one life, one resurrection, no do-overs.
4 different anthropologies, 4 different answers to what is the thing that might come back.
They're not just abstract philosophy. They shape everything. How you think about justice, about suffering, about whether your life is a single exam or one in a series.
The third takeaway is the Pew data, isn't it? The gap between what the doctrines say and what people actually believe.
24% of American Christians, 16% of American Jews. That gap is itself a phenomenon worth watching. As global religious mixing increases, people encountering ideas through media, through friends, through the sheer cultural blender of the internet, reincarnation may become more mainstream in the West. Not through formal conversion, not through synagogues suddenly teaching the Zohar, through cultural osmosis. People assembling their own belief systems from pieces of different traditions.
We're already seeing it. A quarter of Christians holding a belief their councils anathematized 14 centuries ago. That's not a doctrine change. That's something bubbling up from underneath.
The question it raises is whether official theology eventually catches up or whether the gap just keeps widening.
That gap is where Daniel's parked question comes back. If reincarnation is about completing unfinished business, the Jewish model, or escaping the cycle of suffering, the Buddhist model, what does that say about what each tradition thinks is actually wrong with the world?
For Buddhism, the problem is suffering itself. Existence is dukkha, and the cycle perpetuates it. Reincarnation isn't a gift, it's the disease. Liberation means getting off the wheel entirely.
Whereas for Judaism, the problem is incompletion. The vessel's shattered. The work isn't finished. You come back, not because existence is suffering, but because you have a job to do and the deadline got extended.
Two completely different diagnoses of what's broken. And that's the ultimate purpose. Question we parked at the start. It deserves its own episode, probably its own series.
Something to come back to, so to speak.
Here's where I want to land. The next time someone tells you, Judaism doesn't believe in reincarnation, you now have the actual answer. It depends on which Judaism you're asking. The Maimonidean mainstream? Correct, it's not there. The Kabbalistic tradition? It's central. The Hasidic communities that preserved Laurianic teaching? They've been talking about Gilgal for 5 centuries.
Which Judaism? Which century? Which text? The answer is never yes or no, it's open to the Zohar.
I think that's the real gift of Daniel's question. Not a scorecard of who believes what, but a way of seeing that the boundaries between traditions are more like overlapping maps than border walls.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1880s, geologists surveying the Imatong Mountains in what is now South Sudan discovered volcanic vents emitting gases composed of nearly 78% carbon dioxide, with traces of hydrogen sulfide and methane, a composition nearly identical to certain fumaroles in the East African Rift, despite being separated by over 500 kilometers of non-volcanic terrain.
Right. This has been My Weird Prompts, with thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flemingtop. If you enjoyed this, do us a favor and leave a review wherever you listen. It genuinely helps people find the show.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.